Today, we are talking all about miscarriages with Dr. Amatma Simmons, naturopathic doctor and endocrinologist. We discuss what the root causes to pregnancy loss are, some of which may surprise you, what the timing of the loss may indicate, the role hormones play, and what to do after a loss, as well as how to support someone going through one. This is a much anticipated episode on a topic that is under-talked about, especially in the way Dr. Amatma shares. Let's dive in. Welcome to Healthy as a Mother, the podcast for becoming and being a mother, with your co-hosts, Dr. Leah Gordon and Dr. Morgan McDermott, two naturopathic doctors who get it.
Each week, we teach you how to be the healthiest mother you can be, from fertility and preconception to pregnancy and birth prep, through postpartum and throughout motherhood, empowering you with the natural health guidance and education you're not getting elsewhere, so you can confidently navigate the broken system at large.
The real, the raw, the untalked about. And remember, this information is not intended to diagnose, treat, or manage any disease. Always consult with your doctor before making any changes. Dr. Amatma is a double board certified naturopathic doctor and endocrinologist in practice for close to 15 years. She specializes in fertility and is the best-selling author of two books, Fertility Secrets, What Your Doctor Didn't Tell You About Baby Making, and Infertility, Struggles, Secrets, and Successes. Dr. Amatma was awarded the Best Naturopathic Medicine Doctor Award locally in 2015 and 2020, and recognized as a top women in medicine doctor in 2020 and 2021. Dr. Amatma is also the creator of Fertile Foundation Supplements, a line of research-driven nutrients to support your fertility journey, and the host of the Egg Meat Sperm podcast. In addition to supporting couples through individualized care in person and long distance, Dr. Amatma also trains practitioners who want to specialize in fertility. She has been featured as the holistic fertility expert on ABC, Fox, CBS, KTLA, MindBody Green, The Bump, etc., along with being interviewed for countless podcasts on topics of fertility, pregnancy, and postpartum health. Okay, Dr. Amatma, I'm so happy to have you here for this much anticipated episode. I've been getting so many questions about miscarriage, and I felt like you were one of the best experts that I could interview about this. So thank you for being here.
Oh, thank you. That's such an honor to to have you say that. So thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah. So why don't you tell us a little bit about miscarriage in the sense of, we know it's common. I think a lot of people have seen the statistics that around 1 in 4 pregnancies will end in a loss. But I think women are very confused, and men, partners, everyone's confused as to what is going on, what's happening. Can you kind of tell us a little bit about the causes for miscarriage?
Well, traditionally, the causes for miscarriage is like a really small subset of what I actually think is happening.
Oh, so tell us.
There, most of the time when you ask doctors, OBGYNs, why did a miscarriage happen? The assumption is that a majority of those are going to be chromosomal abnormalities. Mm-hmm. So to a certain extent, if that is the case, which we don't know because we don't test every single miscarriage, we don't have the actual data to prove this.
Yeah.
But the assumption is that it's a chromosomal abnormality. And if that's the case, it's a natural response that the body is trying to protect us from, essentially, like having survival of the fittest and having the healthiest children we can possibly have, right? So I think to a certain extent, that is true. And to a certain extent, miscarriages that happen sometimes are due to these like freak accidents that mm-hmm. are, oh, whoops, we didn't make the right number of genes and mm-hmm. we didn't get all the chromosomes right. And okay, so we had a pregnancy loss.
Yep.
So that is comprehensive of the majority of what doctors have conversations with women about.
Yep.
Outside of that, I think there is the other like 50%+, which has to do with a lot of different factors. And I would say I'm going to pick just the top ones. Often it's underlying autoimmune conditions, underlying inflammation, and underlying potential hormonal imbalances that contribute to pregnancy losses that are going under the radar because we have just the assumption that pregnancy loss is normal, which it's not, right? I truly believe that pregnancy loss is our body telling us something. And even if it's a chromosomal abnormality, it to me, it's like, okay, we had a loss. It's not our fault. Neither one of us is at fault. Mm-hmm. But what can we do next time so that we don't have that happen again?
Yeah.
And the assumption on a lot of the medical profession is like, well, we can't do much about chromosomal abnormalities. But we know from data and science that there's actually a lot we can do about chromosomal abnormalities.
Yep.
There's a lot we can do to support methylation and detoxification and the creation of those chromosomes inside of the egg and the sperm that are going to be supportive of having the best chance at a healthy pregnancy.
Oh, I love that. Thank you so much for shedding light on all of that. I think this is a very misunderstood part of fertility. And I think women who experience it feel very alone. And when they go to find resources, the resources aren't even very good. So it's just kind of an underserved part of our world that's happening to a lot of us, right? So speaking of sperm, can you speak a little bit about that? Because, you know, in my experience, seeing patients and just being around people, I would say women often feel responsible or feel like it's their fault or something's wrong with their body or whatever. Yet we know now that sperm do play a role in miscarriage. Can you speak to that?
Sperm play a significant role in pregnancy loss. And it was probably about 12, 15 years ago when my first like fertility woman was actually a woman that had had 3 pregnancy losses. Mm. And I was like, oh my God, what do I do for her? Right. And like supporting her through that process and just seeing her journey and what was happening in the emotional state of her body when she got pregnant, which happened very quickly. And then like her freaking out and like, oh my God, it's going to end in a loss. And like all of the fear and anxiety, just seeing that, I was like, oh my God, I need to figure this out.
Yeah.
And at that time, I was brand new as a practitioner and had no clue, but I was like, something tells me that we should be testing the men, right? Mm-hmm. I was like, okay, so what do we test for? So I went to the data, went to research, and I was like, is there any data on anything on the male side? And at that time, there literally wasn't. Mm-hmm. But I was like, okay, I'm just going to start testing these guys and seeing what happens. So I created a panel, and the panel was like basic things that every guy should have tested every single year because it's basic markers of health, right? Mm-hmm. And the pattern that I started to see was almost every couple that had had a pregnancy loss, and by almost, I mean like 95% of the guys had either a blood sugar anomaly or homocysteine elevations, which point to methylation defects.
Right.
So those were the two things that just kept repeating. And I was like, okay, this is not a fluke. I'm not crazy. And I talked to other doctors about it and they're like, yeah, you're a little crazy.
But you're not crazy, you know, if you think about how DNA is made. So it makes total sense.
Right. And now we have the data to back it up. There are actual studies that came out about 3 or 4 years ago that prove this exact theory that there is hyperhomocysteinemia and high blood sugar levels in the male partner are going to consistently lead to pregnancy loss in women.
Wow. Oh my gosh. It's like mind blown, right? I mean, I am such an advocate for male factor infertility because I see it so under talked about, and that's our experience. But I think a lot of women are going to be blown away to hear this.
Yeah.
And would you say that, is that separate from having an abnormal semen analysis? Like, could these men have quote unquote normal sperm, but these markers are off?
Oh my gosh. Like, a lot of these men have great sperm by my standards, which is really like way higher than what the doctor says is normal, right? So those have been the norm for us, is like on a semen analysis, sperm look amazing. Sometimes the blood sugar anomalies will show up in sperm as agglutination. So we do see that, but it's not always, and it's not so common that most reproductive endocrinologists are not looking at the sperm from that lens, right?
Right.
So they're like, it looks great. You're good. It's not you. But we really, we have to start taking a step back and being like, it takes two to create every scenario that is every scenario and outcome that is going to happen on the fertility journey. And you can pin me up against the wall and I'll keep screaming the same thing, which is, in no scenario is it just one partner.
Right.
It's always both. And it's just up to us to figure out what is the role that each person is playing. And the degrees might be different. The degrees might be like, okay, this is like a micro role and there isn't a lot that's contributing from your side, but there's still a lot you can do to support parenthood.
Yeah. I'm so curious because I'm selfishly going to ask you all these questions, whether people like understand or not. So when you look at the blood sugar markers in men, is it just high glucose or even high insulin outside of high glucose? Is that playing a factor?
Yeah, high insulin also.
And then my other question with that is, do you find that these issues are contributing to the integrity of the sperm? Like, would a DNA fragmentation test be abnormal in these men, or even a DNA fragmentation test would be normal?
So there, in terms of DNA fragmentation, I will be honest and say we don't have, at least in our practice, we don't have enough men that have done the DNA fragmentation test to consistently see correlations, whether it's abnormal, normal, or not, with blood sugar anomalies. Certainly methylation issues will show up in DNA fragmentation studies, but my suspicion is that insulin and blood sugar may not show up as DNA fragmentation.
Wow.
And this is kind of bold, but I think there are like things in the semen that are like part of the physiology of the sperm that we just don't know yet.
And, oh, fascinating.
And I think that those things are contributing to pregnancy outcomes. I'm going to go on a tangent. Sorry.
Great. Love it.
I'm excited. I feel like even I've seen massive like miracles happen from men that physiologically didn't have anything going on. Sperm were amazing, yet they maybe had inflammation happening under the surface, or even one guy, which this one is like blows me away. He was chronically in fear, and he had been for 3 years, and it manifested in low back pain. So he couldn't like sit, he could only stand or lay down. And so we like released the fear, and his back pain went away, and he was managing this pain with three different medications, chiropractor, osteopath, and some like energy person. So he was doing a lot to manage it. His pain completely goes away. 2 weeks later, his partner is in my office like, we're pregnant.
Oh my gosh.
And like 3 years of infertility. And all of a sudden, and I was like, okay, there has to be something that is going on. And his fear was around, I don't want to bring a child into this crazy world. And some of his prescriptions were like, okay, you need to stop looking at the news. Yeah. You need to stop like feeding into the fear mode that is happening in our world.
Right.
And like that is what I believe change it. And I will never be able to prove this.
Yeah.
Maybe one day we'll like find out what these like little things are that are sending signals
yeah.
to the egg, whether or not it's a good time to reproduce.
And oh my gosh, that's so fascinating.
Right? So I don't know. That's the stuff that's exciting to me.
That is so cool. I love that. I love being naturopathic doctors because I feel like we understand. We're really curious practitioners, and I think that it's through curiosity that new understandings come into our awareness and new inventions happen and new things. We're not just, you know, playing by the books, well, if it's not a double-blind placebo-controlled trial, it doesn't exist type of thing. And it's like that has never gotten anybody anywhere, right? Mm-hmm. Like mm-hmm. innovation happens when you have the curiosity to ask these questions and to experience the world in a different way. So I think that's amazing. And I agree with you. I think there's a lot more at play that we are barely even scratching the surface of understanding. So thank you for that.
Yeah.
So my question now is, based on when a couple experiences a loss, whether it's early, what we call mm-hmm. a chemical mm-hmm. pregnancy or chemical miscarriage, or around 7 or 9 weeks, or, you know, late into the first or second trimester, does the timing point anywhere toward a cause? Can a couple kind of think, well, maybe this is what's going on with me based mm-hmm. on the time?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely think the timing is an indicator. It's not the end-all be-all. That's not a diagnosis. But in general, I see chemical pregnancies as a slightly different scenario than a miscarriage or pregnancy loss.
Oh, tell us about that.
It's chemical pregnancy is almost most frequently going to be a failure of implantation. And those are often immune related things
okay.
that are happening on either side, probably mm-hmm. mostly the woman, that's what we know, but maybe both sides.
Yep.
And there's a growing body of evidence that the vaginal microbiome, cervical microbiome, is playing a role in implantation.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that from that side, I would say chemical pregnancy slightly different. The pregnancy losses in the first trimester, so 7 to 11 weeks of pregnancy,
mm-hmm.
even we could crunch that to 10 weeks, because 10 weeks is where the baby is going to take over production of progesterone.
Yeah.
So often that period may have more to do with hormones.
Mm-hmm.
It may still have a component of inflammation or immune system. It may still have a component of microbiome imbalances. But the primary part of that is going to be, there is going to be a indicator of hormone imbalances. And that's also the time where whatever was happening for the male is going to influence the outcome.
Oh, what do you mean by that? Tell us more about that.
So in essence, it's like the women that have had pregnancy losses during that time period, 7 to 10 weeks, they are the ones that are most correlated with the male partner having methylation issues, blood sugar issues, et cetera. So the things that we're talking about specifically are going to influence the male side, influencing the female side, or the mm-hmm. pregnancy outcome is going to play the biggest role in that first trimester.
Wow. Fascinating.
In the second trimester is more going to be the development of the embryo. And often chromosomal anomalies will show up more during that second trimester.
Mm-hmm.
So that like 11 weeks onward, all the way through the second trimester, we're really looking at the chromosomal stuff more than some of the other possible outcomes. So wow. By that point, the immune system has made peace with the embryo.
Mm-hmm.
There isn't, the embryo is like solid and stable enough. That's kind of how I think of it. As if it has made it that far, there are going to be fewer things to knock it off. Mm-hmm. And those things are going to often be bigger underlying issues. So the chromosomal anomalies to me are things that are like, this is actually the right move for the embryo to terminate itself because mm-hmm. it's protecting survival of the fittest. We want yeah. the healthiest babies possible. So that time period is actually, it's almost like a better time. I don't, there's never a better time, right? There's yeah. never a better pregnancy loss time. But
right.
from the physiology side, it's like a more definitive time of like, hey, this was a chromosomal thing. And yes, we should still work on egg and sperm quality, but it was probably an anomaly, mm-hmm. right? It was a fluke. It was a freak accident. More than it was, this is a pattern. It's that the first trimester is really where I feel like a majority of the losses happen. And it's a major, like, hey, there's so much that could be going on. We need to figure out what it is.
Right.
And we need to address all of these things so that we can prevent another loss.
Yeah. Yeah. Speaking of that, can you speak to recurrent pregnancy loss? And, you know, I'm trying to just think of questions that listeners might be having. When you spoke about, I guess this is a separate question, but let's just talk about it first. When you spoke about chemical pregnancy being potentially an implantation issue, how does that work if a woman has a chemical pregnancy, but then the next pregnancy is successful? You know, how would that work if it was a microbiome or an immune system issue? Is it kind of just like a fluke thing, or could that also be a chromosomal issue where maybe that embryo particularly wasn't healthy enough? Or how do you speak to that? And then the second question on that is, what about the women who just keep having loss after loss? I know those are kind of two separate questions, but they're two different scenarios, right? Where someone has a loss and then they end up with a totally healthy baby and it's like, why? And then some people just have mm-hmm. loss after loss. Like, what is that all about?
Well, I think the woman that maybe has a chemical pregnancy and then the next pregnancy is fine, it's either the body adapted and is in a new state. She unknowingly took some herbs, she took antibiotics for something completely unrelated, and it cleared out the microbiome imbalance. There could be so many things that happen there.
Mm-hmm.
It could be that it really, like, her body found a new homeostasis, potentially.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The second is maybe she had an unknown influence. Like, she didn't get, in that first pregnancy, she didn't get enough blood flow and circulation to the uterus. And it could be as simple as that.
Mm-hmm.
She found herself sitting a lot. She maybe had a new job, whatever. And then something changed and she has a new life scenario. So mm-hmm. there are a lot of factors that could change between pregnancy one and pregnancy two.
Mm-hmm.
With chemical pregnancies, I find that a lot of the women, at least the ones that I've talked to, if they've had one chemical pregnancy, they will continue to have chemical pregnancies.
Mm-hmm.
And that is unfortunate. Like, one of the women that we're working with right now, like 12 chemical pregnancies.
Wow.
And I was like, listen, you need to put a pin in this. Like, mm-hmm. no more pregnancies.
Yeah.
And like, please, please, please don't go ahead till we give you the green light.
And literally, do you think like, this, because I have a patient like this too, who has multiple chemical pregnancies, like not 12, but close. And, you know, this is where I'm starting to be like, okay, we need to seriously consider the male partner's role in this, but are you saying maybe male partner isn't as much of a role in the early pregnancy?
Oh, you know what? I'm not at all saying that. Okay. Chemical pregnancies, so, male still the partner. It's still a role
that
they're playing. Mm-hmm. There's still a component, which is the embryo quality, right?
Yeah.
Like embryo quality is going to impact implantation. So if it's not, if that embryo isn't sending out the right signals at the right times in the right place, then it's a missed opportunity, basically.
Right. So it could come from the woman's uterus side, or it can come from the embryo side, which is what we see in failed transfers sometimes with IVF, right? That's not technically the same, you know, miscarriage categorization, but it's similar in the sense that things aren't working in the transfer world. So it could be the embryo, but it could also be the woman's body.
Yeah, totally.
And the embryo quality comes from her and him, which people forget.
Yes. It's not just the egg quality.
I know.
Even doctors, like the number of times doctors are like, oh, it's your egg quality.
I know. Like, makes me want to scream. I know.
Let's take a quick break to hear a word from our sponsors. Men are often forgotten about or neglected when it comes to fertility, which is insane given the fact that they contribute 50% to making a baby. Male factor also accounts for almost 50% of infertility cases, and sperm health plays a major factor in pregnancy loss. So why aren't we talking about and supporting men more? At Needed, they are. One of my favorite products is their Sperm Support Plus, which is an amazing blend of herbs and nutrients to support optimal testosterone and sperm production, antioxidants to support sperm quality, and probiotics for an optimal microbiome. This blend is not only good for fertility, but for men's health in general, because what is good for fertility is good for everything else, from mood to libido to energy. It was designed to be taken in combo with Needed's Men's Multi, Omega-3s, and CoQ10. Visit thisisneeded.com and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 20% off your first order. Again, visit thisisneeded.com and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 20%.
Pregnancy loss can be devastating, heart-wrenching, and confusing. Many women and couples are left in the dark wondering what to do next. They aren't sure what steps they should take, how to process the grief, or what avenues of health they should explore before trying again. As I have been helping women and couples for many years in private practice and through my online programs, I have received many requests for more information on pregnancy loss. This is a big reason why we did this podcast episode, and it's also why I finally made my pregnancy loss guide. This 11-page clickable resource guides you through the different aspects to consider and look into after experiencing a miscarriage. I imagined one of my patients asking, "What do I need to know and do now?" And that was how this guide was created. Throughout the guide, I also share what additional support you can obtain through experts in the field, as well as my own course offerings. Everything was created to support women and couples just like you. If you want to get access to my guide, head to www.womanhoodwellness.com/loss. Again, that's www.womanhoodwellness.com/loss. I hope this serves as a beacon of hope and a useful support along your fertility journey. Sending my love as always. Okay, back to the show.
With the recurrent pregnancy losses, I think that's a and specifically then we're talking about first trimester pregnancy loss, not a chemical pregnancy.
Mm-hmm.
We really do find that women are going to, or couples are going to be more likely to be successful when they have worked on all of the underlying layers that are contributing to that outcome.
Yeah.
And like I said, that the first trimester is really like the place where there are the most influences. It's the place where the embryo needs the most support.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of the most common place where pregnancy loss is happening. It's like if we look at the ratios between first, second, and third trimester loss, we're going to have the majority of the women fall towards the first trimester.
Yeah. So let's talk about the hormones. You had mentioned that hormonal imbalances can play a big role in the first trimester loss. In particular, I'm assuming you're talking about progesterone, unless there's some other hormonal imbalance you want to speak to. But can you talk about the hormonal imbalances and progesterone and what you recommend women doing who have maybe had a loss in that time period? Should they be checking their progesterone? Tell us about that.
So I have a very contrarian opinion about this, and I get a lot of heat for it, and I'm okay with that. which is progesterone. If you do not have adequate progesterone, yes, that will contribute to pregnancy loss. However, inadequate progesterone is probably not the cause of your pregnancy loss. Meaning, if you have low progesterone, it's really an indicator of egg quality more than anything else.
Yeah.
So because the shell, for those that are listening, the shell of the egg that is ovulated in the pregnancy, in the time that you get pregnant, is going to be influenced, or is going to really be in charge of making progesterone for that 2-week period of potential pregnancy happening, and it's going to influence whether or not you sustain that pregnancy in the first trimester till the embryo takes over. So that corpus luteum is crucial in whether or not a woman's making enough progesterone. Mm-hmm. So for me, the progesterone is very much a Band-Aid. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Mm-hmm. I have certainly seen groups of women that come in right when they get pregnant and are like, oh my God, please save my pregnancy. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay, well, at that point, we have very few options outside of giving you progesterone.
Yeah.
But that's not the ideal case scenario, right? And they're like, is it going to definitely work? And I'm like, well, no, it's 50-50. Like, it may work. But if that progesterone is so low and is really the indicator for the egg quality, then no, like saving, quote unquote, saving the pregnancy isn't necessarily even wise, because now we have masked over the survival of the fittest and we could have other issues down the line.
Yeah. So, no, I know. That's what I tell people. You know, all the markers that people think they're looking at their egg quality is actually looking at egg count, you know, like AMH and the antral follicle count. There's really not a good marker to look at quality, except for, in my opinion, the level of progesterone that you make in the mid-luteal phase. So, you know, what I always recommend patients is to, when they're thinking about conceiving, to check your progesterone in the mid-luteal phase, so week after ovulation, and see if it's adequate. And if it's not, to seriously work on egg quality, because you want to support that naturally. And like you said, if a person has become pregnant, you know, I've helped people quote unquote, save pregnancies with progesterone. But then I've also had patients who we put on progesterone and it still ends in a miscarriage. So it's like if the egg is healthy, or if it's healthy enough to become a baby, and you maybe need a little bit more support, but at the end of the day, this is just a symptom, right? A symptom of something else going on. So it's a tricky place to be in. And I think everyone just wants that quick fix of like, oh, I'll just take this hormone and all my problems will go away. And it's just not that simple.
Yeah. Absolutely. So we covered the big hormone. Mm-hmm. I think there's a couple of hormones that don't get enough light shed on them.
Yeah, tell us.
One is estrogen. Mm-hmm. And the number of women that I've seen with low estrogen in the luteal phase is really high, right? And we don't prioritize estrogen in the luteal phase. We don't think of estrogen as a fertility hormone. It's always progesterone, right? Mm-hmm. But without estrogen, the body doesn't really have the signal to grow the embryo. Estrogen is the pro-growth hormone in our bodies. So if it doesn't have enough estrogen, that embryo is not going to be growing at the right pace, at the right level that we would like to see it being growing.
Right.
So that's really important. And the third one is cortisol, actually. Because high levels of cortisol production, or the body's need to produce cortisol to sustain, will pull from progesterone production.
Right.
So, and not in such a simplistic way, but in order
nothing
to
is
simplify.
That simple.
But if we are not adequate actively sustaining our cortisol level. And if we have a mismatch of cortisol maybe being high at night, or the woman's anxious and goes into anxiety mode because she's had a pregnancy loss before, all of those things are going to influence whether or not we have a good, healthy pregnancy this go around.
Yeah. Wow. That's amazing. So when people talk about stress playing a role in miscarriage, is that true? Can stress contribute to miscarriage or not really? Or is it maybe cortisol playing a role? Or
yeah.
It's not
yes
that simple.
And no. Yes and no. Okay. I feel like stress gets blamed all the time, right? Oh, just relax. You'll get pregnant. Oh, just relax. It'll be fine. Mm-hmm. And yes and no. Mm-hmm. Yes, it's true if you are able to relax, quote unquote, in a way that helps your body feel safe and helps your body go into a mode that is able to really like step into a different zone when you are pregnant, then great, relax. That's going to work. But if your stress has maybe been long-term, if that stress is maybe coming from the mold that you're exposed to in your home, if that stress is coming from your immune system, like there's so many factors that quote unquote equal stress, right? So to me, it's really like stress is just way too simple of a term that we often don't define very well.
Yeah, so, I agree. Yeah, I have a whole course on stress because I feel like it's a very overly talked about and completely misunderstood concept. Mm-hmm, and for people to be told, just reduce your stress, it's like, what does that even mean? I mean, we don't even, you know, that's such an abstract idea. And it is tricky, especially in the infertility space, because it's probably one of the most triggering things that people are told is to stop stressing. And we know as doctors that it does play a role in certain things, but it's so much more complicated than that. So
yeah,
thank you for shedding light on that.
Yeah. And with pregnancy loss in particular, there is the emotional stress of getting pregnant again is way undervalued. And I have seen and believe that our body holds memories.
Yeah.
So often the uterus or the ovaries or some part of a woman's body is holding on to the previous loss or losses in a lot of cases. And when the body's holding on to that, the instant she gets pregnant, that part of the body goes crazy again, right? And it's that, so that level of quote unquote stress will be not supportive to her current pregnancy.
Absolutely. So I asked a question on my Instagram, which is what's prompted a lot of the questions in this podcast. And a lot of them revolved around, when is it a good time to try again? How do you recover from the emotions of a loss? You know, how do you not be scared to get pregnant again? What resources or tools or situations do you recommend for women who have experienced a loss so that they feel like they could maybe clear some of that out of their body or, you know, navigate this whole trying again season?
Yeah, I think we, at least in our practice, we have a mind-body component, which is really strong, and we like highly advise it for women who have suffered losses before, because it's not a tool or like a thing, right? It's not something you can buy. It's really like you have to do the work and you have to release that trauma out of your body.
Yeah.
So the mind-body system is my approach to it. I certainly think things like tapping or EMDR therapy, or even like talking to a therapist can be helpful in releasing that emotion from our body. But it's so important. The other, I will add, one of the tools that I have found myself recommending to women is to do some release work. And that could mean like holding a funeral for your child that passed, or writing a letter to the baby as a spirit and like burn it, send it off into the earth. Sometimes women have been like, oh, I like my intuition said to tie it to a balloon and let it loose. Awesome. That's great. Yeah. I love it. So really like feeling into your own trauma around that and seeing if there is, if your intuition is calling you into some way of releasing that trauma can be really freeing.
Yeah, I love that. I think the mental emotional work is completely under talked about as well in the fertility space, and I think is probably one of the most important aspects that, again, women have no support around. And trauma release and all of these different things that we're talking about is very different in certain situations than just seeing a therapist, even though that's super helpful. And for some people, you know, talking is really helpful at getting things out. But I think a lot of people don't even realize how many types of practitioners and how many types of support there is out there to help release and remove trauma and emotions and things like that from the body. So I'll put some of my favorite resources in the show notes, and I'll obviously share all of Dr. Amama's as well, because I think that that's an important part and what I would recommend, you know, on top of also identifying any of the root causes that could be contributing to loss, but to definitely work on that, whether you have had a miscarriage or have had failed transfers in IVF, which is another form of loss that a lot of people reach out to me about. So let's talk about some logistics. Some of the people ask questions. What do you recommend, being an integrative doctor, on miscarrying naturally versus taking the medicine versus doing a DNC? If someone has, you know, the experience that they now have to make that decision, what do you typically recommend?
I will couch this with, I have seen it infrequently, believe it or not, because the majority of the people that work with us are coming in already having experienced losses previously and are like, how can we never do this again? And then they have a healthy pregnancy and a healthy birth. So
wow, that's great.
I've honestly supported 2, maybe 3 women through a miscarriage.
Wow. In
so many years, right? So it's sort of like my specialty, and I'm like, I don't ever want to have to support women with miscarriages. Mm-hmm. So that, I will couch it in that. The few people that have went through that with us, usually I leave it to choice. So a lot of women will say, oh no, I don't want to take the medication, or I don't want to have a DNC. So if they have a personal preference, then we guide them with whatever their preference is.
Yeah.
And I certainly, like, DNC can have risks, but so can the other methods.
Yeah.
So I think that it's really your choice. Mm-hmm. The body knows what to do.
Yeah.
So at the core of it, I feel like the body can, most of the time, release the unborn child in whatever way it sees fit. It will happen eventually. Mm-hmm. The medications or even herbs sometimes we've used will only make it go a little bit faster, mm-hmm. sometimes a little bit more painful. And DNC potentially has the slight risk of scar tissue. So it's always like, what do you feel like doing? What's your body saying to do with this? And is there any advice from your doctor that you do or do not want to follow? And it's always a choice. I've seen so few of these cases, so it's hard to say.
I mean, that's amazing and that's wonderful. And such a testament to your dedication to helping people, because I don't think a lot of other doctors who work with women getting pregnant, you know, traditional OB-GYNs and stuff could say anything similar. So good for you for helping with that and helping women and families. So with that question, if a couple has experienced a loss, what is the timeline that you typically tell them, you know, if they were to come to you, let's say, how long do you recommend people wait? Do you say if you've had a loss, like there are some things we definitely need to investigate right away before trying again? Or what is kind of your, what is the path that you recommend people do if they've had a loss?
Yeah, good question. So at the minimum, there is like a 3-month period that we want to let the hormones reset. Mm-hmm. Most of the time, the hormones will reset on their own if they were balanced before they got pregnant. If they were imbalanced before they got pregnant, then certainly like bringing more balance and having more optimization of hormonal fluctuation through the cycle is going to be really, really helpful. Mm-hmm. In a majority of the cases, I think it's really, my encouragement is for women to take a step back and say, if this is the first time it's happened, cool. We could either decide at this point, like, we're going to try again and see what happens, or we want to do something about it, be proactive, and never have this happen again. Mm-hmm. And that's a personal choice. I think by the time we have a second loss, it's pretty much like, okay, now we need to start doing some investigating.
Yeah.
And the investigating for us doesn't change whether it's the first or the second or the fifth. And we've seen, I've seen all the way up to 6 pregnancy losses.
Wow.
And like I said, chemical pregnancies, whole different scenario. I've seen women have like so many.
Yeah.
So it really, like, it's based on your risk profile, right?
Yeah.
If you're like risk averse, oh my God, this was the worst experience I've ever had, and I don't ever want to experience it again, then great, let's start doing something about it now. Mm-hmm. And assume, like, in all of these years of doing this, I have not found any of these women to not have a root cause. Mm-hmm. Right. So, or I should say couples, because mm-hmm. we talked about the sperm component.
Right.
Almost every couple has multiple factors that contributed to a pregnancy outcome.
Yeah.
And we can always test for it. We almost always find it relatively quickly. Mm-hmm. And I always say, listen, yes, it's a lot of testing to go through, but if nothing else, like if we find nothing, you can walk out of this with like, my mind is at ease. I'm good. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like I have so much less worry. And that mm-hmm. alone is great for your stress levels the next time you get pregnant.
Totally.
Right? It was actually a fluke is a really good answer. Mm-hmm. And I've been waiting to say that to someone for 15 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm like, every time I do the testing, I'm like, oh, I just hope that it's a fluke. Like, I want to be able to tell women it's a fluke. Mm-hmm. And that would make me so happy. But the reality is, if we ask the right questions and we do all of the testing, so far, I haven't had the opportunity to tell anyone that's a fluke. So
right.
that partly it's a good thing because now we've discovered what's happening and we can do something about it. And partly it sucks because I don't like having to tell women that there's some things.
Yeah. It's like unexplained infertility, right? It's unexplained because we aren't looking in the right places.
Yeah.
That's why it's unexplained, because you're not asking the right questions. So same thing. Thank you for sharing that. And you're such an asset to this world and to families who are trying to conceive. So before we wrap up, I just want to end on this last question, which I know a lot of people have, which is, how do you recommend supporting people mm-hmm. who have gone through a loss. If you mm-hmm. have a friend, a family member, somebody close to you, because it's so common, you think we would know as a society how to support people through this, but we just don't. So what do you tell people, or what would be your advice, if any?
I think it's like, be there for the person. Let them know that you're there. Sit and say nothing, mm-hmm. right? There are no words that are going to make this better for them. So I think often we're like, well, I just don't know what to say. Great. You don't have to say anything. I've mm-hmm. been on the phone with women, just like on the phone. Mm-hmm. We're literally doing nothing. There's no words. There's no, like, I can just feel their heart, and it's okay to not know. It's, I think also the other thing I've noticed is that women want and need different things when it's happening. Yeah. So especially for that partner, right? The partners are often like, I don't know what to do. Like, I'm at a loss. I don't, like, yeah, I'm going through my emotions too, mm-hmm. but they're not nearly as bad as hers. Mm-hmm. It's her body, right?
Right.
And in those moments, like, for partners, it's so, so, so important to A, like, help your partner feel like you're in it with them.
Yeah.
Right. And a lot of men are like, well, no, it's her body, so I'm not going through this, and I have to be the strong one. And it's almost always better when he's in it, right? Yeah. Like, the feeling of, we are having a pregnancy loss, not yeah. I am having a pregnancy loss and I am the one that did something that caused
right.
it.
Right.
So it's really helpful for partners to go through it together, to hold that, for the men to just be like, yeah, this sucks. Like, it's yeah. okay to be like, it sucks. I'm going yeah. through this with you. It sucks. My heart is breaking. It's not your fault. And it still sucks.
Yeah.
So really, like, for relationships, I've seen lots of relationships grow through that loss and become stronger because of it. And then there are others who don't. And often the ones that don't become stronger are the ones that are like, the partner doesn't know how to show up, doesn't really, like, hold the space and allow her to go through her emotion. And for outside, like, family and friends, I think it's just really important to not give those messages of, oh, it'll be fine next time. You'll be okay.
At least you got pregnant. Yeah.
It comes from a good place.
Right.
But it's so detrimental. Like, the comments yeah. are just not necessary. So instead, right. being like, what can I do to support you? What's the yeah. best way for me to support you? How can I show up in a way that is going to help rather than harm?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
just asking that question and then being okay with whatever she says, like, oh, I just need some space. I'm not going to talk to you for a while. Be okay with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it's so hard for us because we're just not trained in our society to deal with grief or loss or trauma or anything really at all. Mm-hmm. But I think the biggest thing to just remember for anything, whether it's someone going through infertility or a loss or anything, is to acknowledge that you're there, that you know, you care about them, that you're there for them. Because the number one thing I hear people say is they feel so alone. When they go through a loss, they feel so alone. They don't say, oh, no one was there to fix it. No one was there to tell me advice. No one was there to, mm-hmm. I feel alone. So, you know, let them know that they're not alone. Like you said, ask them how you can support them and acknowledge that it sucks, just like you said, because I think we feel so uncomfortable saying these kind of things. Yet the person going through the struggle knows it sucks. You telling them that it's going to be okay, or that, you know, telling you all of the solutions or all the things is to make it better, it doesn't make it go away that it sucks. And it just makes them feel guilty for having the feelings and emotions that they do about it sucking. Mm-hmm. So if you can just acknowledge the elephant in the room, you know, sit with someone and say, this really sucks. I'm here for you. How can I support you? Like, that's the best thing I think you can do for people in these situations, like you said. So that's just Yeah, I just summarized what you said, but it's just, I think people do feel really confused during anything hard. And it's just so weird that we aren't taught this, right? How to handle these very simple interactions for these very big, big events that happen so much. And it's so sad. So thank you for all of your wisdom and knowledge. You are such a vault of everything that's amazing to share in the fertility space. How can people find you, connect with you? Do you take patients, clients? Like, tell us all the things.
Yeah. So the best place to connect is Instagram at holisticfertilitydoctor. We are very much in the chat, so just send us a message. And we do take clients. Mm-hmm. We stop calling them patients because I never liked that energy anyway.
Yeah.
But now I live in Texas where I'm not licensed. So
everyone's a client.
We have clients. Yeah. And we have this is our specialty. This is really like, if I could support every woman and couple in this world to never have another pregnancy loss, I would be very satisfied with my life.
Yeah.
So
that's amazing. Well, thank you so much for being here. I am just so thrilled, and I can't wait for everyone to find the support that they're looking for through this podcast and hopefully a lot of your other resources.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Healthy as a Mother podcast. In order for others to hear this information, please leave a review with Apple Podcasts, subscribe, and send to a friend who could benefit from this content. We're so excited to share more on becoming and being a mother next time.
And please remember that the ideas and views of this podcast are for informational purposes only and are not intended to serve as a substitute for medical care of any kind, including the diagnosis or treatment of any illness or disease. Consult with your provider before integrating this information into your own care plan. And remember, a healthier future starts now, and it starts with you.